For the Family Vision Center in downtown Atlantic, this is Chris Parks, joined by the Cass and Adair County Conservation Officer Grant Jelly with another conservation report here on KJN. Good morning to you, Grant.
Hey, good morning, Chris.
Well, we're moving on into some more winter-like weather, that's for sure. We've been seeing a little bit of that now here this week with finally a little bit of those flurries and snow flying in the air, so getting people anxious about the upcoming hunting seasons as well. And one of those that's currently active would be the waterfowl season. And I know those folks like some of those changes in weather as well. And we're starting to see some pretty good numbers here around the state, Grant.
Yeah, we are. You know, this is kind of the time of the year that if you're a waterfowl hunter, you kind of live for, because we kind of started to reach the peak of the migration for ducks and geese here across the state. And you know, in Iowa, we kind of have a pretty short window where if you're a waterfowl hunter that, you know, say hunts a marsh or something like that, a shallow water impoundment, typically we go from open water to frozen water pretty quickly. So with some of the weather that we've got in the coming weeks, I suspect that some of these shallow water marshes will start to fill up and they will definitely be frozen over. And so you'll see kind of ducks and geese shift to bigger impoundments or places that don't freeze quite as readily. But yeah, you can go to our website, and I think I read this morning's waterfowl report that came out, and we've got some really high duck numbers across the state, which is, again, kind of indicates that the migration is at its peak. And Riverton, for example, had nearly 50,000 ducks down there, so that's a pretty good number for an Iowa wetland area. And then we had, I think, at least five or six areas across the state that had at least 10,000 birds or more. So we've got some really good numbers here. If you're a duck hunter, it's a great time to get out. And, you know, when the waters freeze over, people kind of tend to switch to field hunting and Canada goose season. And so that'll be plenty of options with that, too, that are just right around the corner. So take advantage of it before it gets too cold.
Yeah, good time to do that. And, yeah, probably a pretty big influx here this weekend as we air this as well with that change in weather also. So good time for folks to be able to get out there.
And also, Chris, there's a lot of eagles that are starting to show up, as most people are probably starting to notice here. And trumpeter swans are starting to, you know, hit the Shilberg quarries out here as well. So it's not all about ducks and geese, but, you know, for the bird enthusiast in general, there's a lot of different birds that are migrating through. I've seen all sorts of different hawks and raptors lately, and the eagles are definitely starting to show up here in pretty good numbers. And, you know, just kind of a precautionary measure about eagles is if you do see them sitting along the side of the road, chances are they're probably feeding on a deer carcass or some sort of a roadkill animal. So you might want to slow down and give them a little bit of space, because unfortunately it seems like, you know, automobiles are probably the number one killer of eagles and raptors, because they do tend to take advantage of those free meals along the side of the road and ultimately end up getting spooked. And, you know, I get calls all the time this time of the year about people finding eagles out in fields or down in the ditch, and ultimately it's you know, they were hit by a car or vehicle of some sort. So just pay a little bit more attention not only to the deer that are all over the roads right now, but there's a lot of birds that are out there as well too.
Yeah, good reminder for sure. Well, as we have, of course, that season going on, everybody else kind of getting ramped up and geared up here for deer season, which will be upon us here very soon, and lots of things to keep in mind. And a part of that will, of course, be paying attention to some of the things that you see out there as well. We've got CWD that's always a problem with the deer populations, and we want folks to have an opportunity to report those things and turn in samples if they have the chance.
Yeah, definitely. This has kind of been a atypical year as far as disease concerns for deer. With the dry weather that we had this summer and early fall, we've seen a fair number of EHD, or what's commonly referred to as blue tongue disease, in deer. And so a lot of times when people people find a dead deer, they right away are concerned about CWD. And I think that's partially our own fault because we do a lot of, education and advertising for CWD and avoiding the transmission and spread of that disease, which, is important. However, people need to keep in mind that there are a lot of things working against white-tailed deer this time of the year. The deer rut, the breeding time is upon us right now. So I get calls a lot from people that, they find a deer and, they don't see any bullet holes or they don't see any arrows in it. And, it's laying in a field or it may be staggering around or just kind of in a daze. And, we have to keep in mind that the rut is very hard on a mature white-tailed deer buck. They do a lot of ground covering. They expend a lot of energy, don't spend a lot of time eating because they're mostly concerned about breeding. So, there's exhaustion that can take place. There's injuries from fighting with other bucks. They get hit a lot of times by farm equipment or vehicles as they're covering so much ground. So I just would encourage people to not, immediately assume that it's CWD if you find a dead deer. That being said, CWD is being found in a handful of places here in Iowa. Fortunately, we don't have any positive samples here in the Cass County area. We've had some kind of over on the Pott County line in past years from a captive breeder, but we're not finding any in wild herds. But we are still doing testing. So if a person calls and they have a deer that they've harvested and perhaps it doesn't look right on the inside or the meat's a different color or it stinks, first of all, if any of those things are taking place, probably would not suggest eating it. They're still going to have to tag it and report it and do all that stuff, and a new tag will not be issued. But if the meat doesn't smell or look right, then definitely you want to avoid eating it. Secondly, if you as the hunter are concerned about the deer that you have harvested that is seemingly healthy looking, and you just have some concerns about chronic waste disease and how it can impact your family if you're eating that deer, you can submit a sample of the lymph nodes. And if you go to our website and just do a CWD testing search, there'll be instructions on there and a form that you'll fill out, and it'll tell you where to send those samples. There is a $25 fee that I think it's the lab will charge for that, and then you can go to the DNR's website later down the road and enter your DNR number and look up your test results there to confirm whether it was positive or negative testing. Years ago, we were doing a lot of testing on our own where someone would call and, oh, I got a sick-looking deer. Well, we would, just test that for them. But, we've gotten to the point where it's a pretty costly endeavor for us, and we just simply can't test all of those deer. We have kind of quotas in our own counties where we're doing the just random sampling of road kills some hunter-harvested deer that we seek out. But if a person is concerned about it, there's a pretty extensive process that you can figure out on our website that isn't too difficult to navigate through if you just read the instructions and submit the sample appropriately. So I just want to remind people that it is something that's available to them. But, me personally, if a deer didn't look real sickly or it was behaving normally, I guess I wouldn't be too concerned myself about eating that deer. But, again, if it was acting funny or emaciated looking or, the meat just wasn't looking salvageable when you opened it up, then I would probably, discard the animal and not consume it. So just some tips there on how to handle possible disease in whitetails.
Yeah, good information there. Another thing that is along the same lines that we had a story here recently from Radio Iowa talking about this situation is, and of course, now with the pandemic that's set in, folks may be a little bit concerned about the possibility of COVID infections within deer populations. And there has been some studies done around the country, and state of Iowa participated in one with Penn State University that kind of investigated that a little bit. And they have found some positive infections with deer populations, but kind of the overall thought on that situation is that it really shouldn't affect your plans throughout the hunting season. It's just still going to be taking the same safety precautions that you normally would when you're out processing deer and handling them. And then it's not going to be an issue as far as consuming in that regard, too. So that's also something else, I guess, to keep in mind.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that I've had a few phone calls or texts about. It's, you know, people at first thought it was kind of a joke or a hoax going around, but you know, there is some studies going on, and you know, I guess the coronavirus itself is nothing new to the animal world. It's been found in you know, all sorts of different species out there in the world, so that's something that we have to remember as well. But you know, again, I don't think we need to get overly excited about the transmission from deer to humans, as long as we're exercising those, you know, safety precautions, like you said, and wearing gloves and washing our hands and handling that meat in a good, clean manner. I think we should be pretty safe from that stuff.
Yeah, not really changing anything that you should be doing in the first place there. So
right.
Good to keep in mind. I know, of course, there's always so lots of things to keep in mind, too, when folks are getting prepped and starting to get things like stands and all that stuff ready. Lots of safety measures to also be prepared for here as we get into those seasons.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I don't think that I created this this little analogy, Chris, but I noticed years and years ago that deer antlers make people do some really, really crazy things, and they make really good people make some really bad decisions throughout deer season. And so whether it's, you know, maybe skimping on a safety device or piece of equipment, or, you know, just breaking a law that a person normally wouldn't do, sometimes they think it's okay during this time of the year just simply to get a chance at that deer with big antlers. But, you know, one of the biggest concerns that we have and the biggest, you know, I guess accidents that we have to deal with at times is people falling out of deer stands. And so there's a lot of people that are out deer hunting right now. Always recommend that if it's a deer stand that you use year after year, hopefully before you go out there that first day in the dark, you have already been out to that site and done a safety inspection of that deer stand, making sure that, you know, squirrels or other rodents haven't chewed the straps on it or the cables, making sure that, you know, it's not rusted through, or that there's chains or other hardware that are broke or missing on that deer stand is definitely something that's important. Want to make sure that you're using a haul line when you crawl up into the deer stand. You pull your gun or your bow up there. You want to make sure that you're using that, so you're using those hands not to hold a gun or bow, but you're using those to pull yourself up on the ladder or whatever it is that you use to climb that tree. And then the last kind of safety feature that you should definitely make sure that you're using is a fall arrest system or a safety harness. There's a whole plethora of different styles that are available now that are, you know, not that expensive. They're really comfortable. And, you know, I myself have one on every time I go out there, because, you know, last thing I need to do is fall asleep or, you know, slip and fall in a deer stand and you fall 20 feet and, you know, end up in a wheelchair for the rest of your life. So for $100 or less, you can get a real comfortable vest you can wear. They make them in adults and youth sizes, so definitely want to make sure that you're wearing those things each time that you climb up in a deer stand. Another good piece of advice is just to let somebody know where you're going. You know, I try to do that with family members. If it's a place I've never been before, I'll take a screenshot of, you know, where I'm at on a mapping app and send it to somebody so they know where I'm at in case I don't return after dark, or when I'm, you know, much later than expected. And that's a real handy thing to get in the habit of doing now, because, you know, last thing you need to do is go out into an area where you don't have good cell service and maybe don't tell someone. And then you go out there and you do have some sort of, you know, unfortunate accident, and then nobody can find you for, you know, hours and hours, and you have to sit out there in the cold all night if you have some sort of an injury, and, you know, emergency services have a hard time getting to you. So let somebody know where you're at, whether it's, you know, texting someone information, leaving a note, you know, on the dash of your truck, if you're hunting a public area or even a private area. Those sorts of things can maybe save your life if something unfortunate does occur. So, you know, always try to prepare for the worst, but, you know, usually when we prepare for something bad to happen, hopefully we don't have that misfortune. But if we do, instead of laying there all night, you can get help pretty quickly. So, again, just some things to keep in mind when you're out there. If you're taking a child or someone, make sure that you're practicing, you know, safe gun handling practices with them and teaching them. I get a lot of calls and questions about taking youngsters out deer hunting or in youth seasons or any other seasons. So, you know, the focus should be on the kid and making sure that they have a good time, but they're definitely remembering some of those safety principles when they're out there doing it.
Yeah, great stuff to keep in mind, and kind of one of those things in life, just like anything else, where you think, well, that's not gonna be my situation, not gonna happen to me. But like you said, much better to be prepared and have a positive outcome from all that. Grant, we appreciate you giving us some more information here this week, and we'll be starting getting busy out there in the outdoors.
Yeah, definitely. And again, if people are have any questions, or you know, the biggest thing that we run into this time of the year is if you're out there, there's a lot of hunters out there in the woods this time of the year. And if you happen to see something illegal take place or hear of something illegal take place, please give us a call. You can call the Turn-In Poachers hotline, or better yet, you can just call me direct, 712-250-0303, and be happy to listen to any reports that you have or answer any questions that you're not sure about.
All right, great stuff. We appreciate you joining us once again. Everybody, thanks for tuning in here to our conservation report. Thanks to Family Vision Center in downtown Atlantic for bringing you another week of that conservation report here on KJN.